The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we're running headfirst into all sorts of new hobbies and distractions and D&D. I don't know. It's gonna be a great episode. I'm sure of it.
I see what you did there. It took me the entire intro to figure it out, but you said running headfirst. It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, everybody, I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody, I'm Brandon, and welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm, a show for you, a show for us, a show for everyone that you know. And there are so many ways that you can tell everyone you know about this show. I don't want to jump right into that, though. I want to ask.
Why would we get that out of the way first?
Yeah. Who needs housekeeping? I want it to be interesting when people show up. I want them to be like, hey, here's a new show. They're already talking about their social media stuff.
Ugh.
I don't even know if I like them enough to follow them, let alone follow their social media. Whoever's saying this is kind of weird, but yeah, welcome to the show. Travis, how are you doing? You want to lead the way on that?
Yeah, sure. I'm fine.
There's two questions there. Good. There's two questions there.
I would like to lead the way, and I'm doing great, Brandon. Thank you for asking. I'm feeling good. Okay, so I had a long weekend. I took a little bit of time off work. So I'm wrapping up the fourth day of a four-day weekend. And it's weird when, I don't know, like sometimes on a long weekend you feel really rested. Sometimes you're like really productive and you feel really accomplished. And I'm just in this weird like gray area where like I did a lot of things. Like some things were productive, and then like today was kind of just like lazy too, and we just like hung out, and I got stuff done around the house, but at the end of the day I was just like, all right, like weird. I guess I'm gonna work and contribute to the economy tomorrow. I guess I could do that.
Isn't that so weird? Sometimes when you start the weekend just so productive that by the end of it you have nothing to do anymore. All your chores, all your miscellaneous things that your spouse or your kids want to do or out of the way. And you're like, I don't know what I want to do with this free time anymore.
guess I could paint something. I don't know. Like,
and even then, like, well, I could paint. I could work on a resume. I could play Xbox. And then you spend about 45 minutes to an hour thinking about what you want to do that you're like,
the next thing you know, you wake up on the couch and it's been 3 hours.
Yeah.
That was funny. Like it was about 2 hours before we were supposed to start recording. And I was like, well, I ate dinner. What could I do between now and when we make a podcast? It's not really enough time to paint. And then I was like, well, actually, no, that's plenty of time. I could easily add a few thin coats to this mini and then still have plenty of time to get ready for a podcast, and especially a podcast as deliberate and intentional and structured as this podcast. I really, really have the time to put all that in.
There's so much time. I want to talk about all the stuff that happened basically this weekend, but let's go ahead and get after the things that we have to get this out of the way, folks. Folks, I call everybody folks.
Sorry.
Now.
It's our contractual obligations as podcasters.
You can find us over on social media, starting with Twitter at Apathusiast. He is at Juggle Mino. I am at Barnyard Cruise, facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow, email is apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com, Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm, website, apatheticenthusiasm.com. You can find us on twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm Mondays or whenever we do decide to record. And following that show, we are on YouTube, youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. You can buy our affection $1 at a time out of 25 to 30. It's at TeePublic, apatheticenthusiasm.com/shop. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And if you want to help us survive, or if you want to start your own podcast, more importantly, head to blueberry.com and use the code AEPOD for 2 months. It used to be 1 month, but now it's 2 months free of double podcast value hosting. Boom, 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 boom. And there you go.
It's done. It's out of the way. We can move on with our lives. Thank you for sticking around.
Thank you.
Brandon, while you were talking about buying our love, it made me think about hearts. Mm. And it made me think about
Valentine's Day.
A heart. Oh. No. That's the day that we skipped podcasting last week.
That's right.
Talking about making a heart shape with your hands. If I was to say, Brandon, make a heart shape with your hands. Okay. Brandon is doing the classic all four fingers up top, curved with the thumbs pointed down in a somewhat curve. That is his heart, right? That's the heart I've always known. I've done for a long time, but the kids these days, they're different. They're, my oldest makes a heart with like the index fingers and then just like the middle fingers. And it's like that's the thing. Or yeah, that's gotta be that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the new heart. That's what the cool kids are doing.
We're part of the different generation. Different generation. Right. Travis,
yeah, we go like this with our pinky and thumb out to pantomime a phone call while the young people just put their hands up like this now. Flat palm.
Do they?
Yeah, there's like studies about that, about how kids, especially like very young children, like behavioral psychologists and stuff will be like, okay, pretend to be on the phone, and they will just put their hand up like that because they don't know the phones that we grew up with, the landline phones. They just know like iPhones and
right
mini tablet type things.
The flat electronics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, pretty soon they'll just be like, I'm putting my AirPods in and they'll walk around.
Yeah. Pretend you're on the phone. I'm on the phone. No hand buy, signals
sell
at all.
Buy, sell.
Alexa.
Give me that crypto.
Hey,
I need a non-fungible token.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I don't want to get into that. I never want to dedicate a podcast to that. Hey, Travis.
Because there's plenty of people that have it covered.
Travis, do me a favor. On camera right now, hold up the number 3 with your fingers. Okay.
Index, middle, ring.
Index, middle, ring. Okay. That's how I did it when Chelsea asked and my kid asked. And evidently they saw this on maybe Instagram, maybe on TikTok, something like that, where they said that older men will hold either the 3 with the thumb pointer and the middle finger or the pinky ring and middle finger.
Okay.
And so far, it hasn't been accurate because most people will do the 3 unless they're from the UK and then they do like the 3 with the thumb.
So that's very interesting because the thumb index middle, that is 3 in American Sign Language. That's the number 3 in ASL. Because if you go index middle ring, that is W, right? Yeah. If you're making that OK symbol with your last 3 fingers, that's the sign of a good 3-pointer in basketball. So I don't know. It could be maybe your baseball fans go thumb for the 3.
Oh, maybe
your basketball fans, you know, are like this. And then the people like us that stay inside most of the time and print miniatures, we're just doing a W.
I've asked a lot of people that question in the last couple of weeks, and the 3 middle fingers are the kind of the standard. And as a matter of fact, I was watching There Will Be Blood again.
I drink your milk.
For the 50 billionth time. And there's a scene in the movie where Daniel Plainview holds up three fingers for some drinks. And I paused it and I took a screenshot of it. And I said, Jesse, please, you did it here too. Anyway.
Okay, I was doing it.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from finger pointing at things, and let's get into some topics, some burning topics. And oh yeah, quick the Ewok in chat mentioning the OK symbol has been linked to racism. That is true. That is very true as well. It's OK. It's also the number three, and it's also racism. So
yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I'm pretty pissed that has been co-opted by terrible white supremacist type people that flash that symbol as a racist symbol. Because as a fan of basketball, that has been used to signify three pointers, and for a long time it was like a way to celebrate. Yeah, I got a three pointer, you know, they flash it up there and stuff. Many of the NBA players that I've seen use that symbol, very sure that they are not white supremacists.
Yeah, three pointer.
Russell Westbrook used to have a thing where he would like do the threes on each side and then like throw them down like he was holstering like his guns or whatever.
Yeah,
love that 3-point celebration. So that is upsetting.
Context is everything, of course. Sure. As far as this goes, when the OK symbol thing became a thing. That circle game that people used to play where like,
oh yeah,
the circle below the waist, then you punch somebody or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When I was in Tampa, they had been playing that game for years. And then all this stuff rolled around. Like, we can't play that anymore. Everybody.
Yeah.
It's no longer a thing. So now we just have to punch people indiscriminately.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, look at this. And then you just punch them. They don't even have to look. You just.
Right in the junk. Punch in the junk. That's the game.
Oh, all right. Let's talk about a punch in the junk. And we'll start with a little thing we call a running program. So I don't know that we covered this actually officially on the last podcast. We may have talked to it a little bit, but I don't know if we fully covered it.
I think we talked to it. And then on the post show, we went into it in more depth. But then promptly we're like, no one's paying attention to us. Let's go ahead and talk about this just between you and me. Let us talk about running. What happened at the start of the new year was I wanted to, even slightly before the start of new year, I wanted to start running, and I wanted to start running for me, not for my job. Not for anything else. I wanted to get into the habit myself of running. And so I had started a 10K training plan, and that lasted about 4 weeks. And I got into the habit of, okay, all right, cool. I'm running more. And then I wanted to get ready for a 10K that is at the end of the year. And to do that, I wanted to have a training plan that just that went on a long time, which is a marathon running plan. And so you and I talked about that, and you're like, yeah, well, maybe a little bit before. The details are cloudy, but I wanted to pull you into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure we've talked about this before. We've utilized the Nike Run Club app for years. I've been using the Nike programs to track my running for like over a decade, I think, at this point, back when you had to put chips in your shoe and all kinds of craziness like that. Right. And, you know, almost 10 years ago now, I ran my first half marathon, my first couple of those. And I used those Nike training plans in their app to train for those. So I really do like how they build their plans and how they can, you know, just help you like push towards those goals. And so when you said you were training for a 10K, I mean, this time last year, I was running 10Ks, you know, a couple times a month. So I was like, you know what? I've dropped off, you know, in that, and I need to pick things back up. I need to get back in the game. 2022 is going to be my year for getting back into running. Brandon's already got a head start. Send me that plan. You send me that 10K plan that you're training, and I'll get right on it. No,
I see
no
where this
issue
is going.
For me.
I see where this is going. Okay.
I open the phone. Brandon, this is a half marathon plan. And your response is like, yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's fine. It'll be fine. Like, we should just do it anyway.
And it has been fine, hasn't it, Travis?
We're only in week two. Yes. Have you looked ahead in, have you read ahead to what some of the weeks we have in our future?
I try not to, because I tend to squeeze my shins every day nowadays and be like, it's okay, babies. It's okay. This will all be over. This will all be over someday. No, I haven't looked ahead. I don't want to look ahead. I know it's going to take up so much more of my time.
Yeah, it will.
But you know, it's strange. I ran a fair amount, maybe about 10 years ago, and I maybe not as much as I'm running now. And there's a little bit of difference here for me here in the sense that I have somebody being you, to help kind of shame each other and to keep going. But also, I would run a mile and a half or 3 miles and then be super tired. And like the next day, the next couple of days, I'm like, oh, I can't do this. But even yesterday I ran 4 miles and there's a speed run, which I didn't do, but I could have. I felt I could do that again because I've been doing it so much. Right.
I fully expected today after that 4 miler, which they're right before. The run before the 4 mile run was a recovery run, but you were supposed to run for 35 minutes. And my recovery pace, I guess, I was at like 3.5, almost like 3.7 miles or something on the recovery run. So I was like, well, crap, that's almost a 4 miler already. So back to back, I ran almost 8 miles in 2 days, or I guess we took a day off in between. But yeah, I was, and right after that recovery run, I was like, oh, I was happy to have a down day, and then ran the 4 miler, felt good running it, despite the crazy wind, the aforementioned wind that was sweeping through the plains. So I did that 4 mile run, expected to be really sore today, and felt like, yeah, no, I could knock out a fartlek if I have to. Which for those that are not familiar is a running term and not the act of licking farts.
That's right. Which the Nike Plus coaches will remind you every single time that you have a run a fartlek is, hey, this is Coach Bennett. Today we're doing the fartlek run. It's a Swedish term, but it's not for farting. No, every time I'm like, yeah, I don't need this. I don't need this joke.
We get it,
every
coach.
Time.
We get it.
I'm in week six, coach.
Seeing as you brought him up, how's your relationship with Coach Bennett right now? How often are you running with him, and how do you feel about his unique sense, his coaching style?
His coaching style is telling me that I'm the coach, which is cool. I tend not to listen to the guided runs except for the speed runs with intervals and fartleks. So yeah. Speed runs primarily. If it's a long run, I don't need them periodically motivating me because I know I'm maintaining one pace and I don't need the motivation necessarily. But if I'm doing a speed, they're kind of leading me into, okay, now cut it off here. Now go ahead and your recovery pace.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go into the next one. It saves me a little bit of mental effort while I'm running to know which one I have to go into next.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with you completely with that. I would hate to have to manage that on my own with the intervals and speed runs, where if I had to be like looking at my phone or being like, oh, that's a minute, and now I know I have to like drop it down or pick up the pace. Just having that in my ears is way easier.
Do you use the guided coaching for anything else?
For the recovery run, I passed on it. I did not do it for the last recovery run. I did for the first recovery run this week, mm-hmm. Which was only like a 15 minute run. Like yeah. it was short. And all of the coaching for it was just, hey, here's the different runs that we have to look forward to this week, and here's what we're going to focus on. And so for that, it's just kind of like, all right, that didn't really help me in the run, and it just interrupted my playlist more than anything. So I don't think I will use it for recovery runs much anymore, but I will say, like, I did use it for the 4 mile run. And I would say that it does help me. I do appreciate the coaching, as cornball as it can be sometimes, and some of the jokes that they try to sneak in there and things. It's just cheesy occasionally.
Their jokes are like somebody trying to joke on a Zoom call where there's no
scripted Zoom call.
There's no feedback back to them, to where they know that they're doing badly or not.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Like, okay. Yeah. Nice try. Nice try. Keep. And sometimes you get an ironic chuckle out of it just because that joke was very bad and I'm running and like, okay, all right. Okay. That's stupid. But
I think what it does for me is it replaces my inner voice with the inner voice of a running professional.
Yeah.
Which I will say, my inner voice when I'm running now, because I've done a lot of those guided runs in the past, I do some of those mental checks on myself already, where I'm like, all right, how is my breathing right now? How are my legs feeling? Am I getting more sluggish? Do I need, like, so I already do some of that out of habit. But that is the thing that I actually do appreciate about those guided runs, is it's training your mental, you know, checklist for when you're running. Because, and it may sound cliche or things like that, but a lot of running is really mental, and your body will often kind of just get into a groove or push past certain things that you feel like you can't really do. Obviously, I'm not saying anyone can jump off the couch and go run a 10K and feel great. But if you've trained your body enough, there is still a mental barrier that you sometimes have to pass through. And I think that those guided runs do help you build that confidence, check in with yourself, and give you the right things to think about to help you finish out some of those runs.
Yeah, the mental walls and barriers that exist, it does sound cliche, but it's true. Just as a small example, I might be so in my head about running or my speed and just like focusing on my legs, my breathing, I'm tired, or I shouldn't keep your head up, Brandon, don't look at the road or whatever it is. And then somebody will be mowing their lawn or just in their driveway as I run past. And then I pass them up. And as I pass them up and get, you know, maybe half a block down from them, then I start slowing down again. And I didn't realize until I was past them that I sped up because they were there watching, or not even watching, just the presence of them.
The presence of others,
knowing that they were there. Like my focus shifted from me out of my autopilot, focusing on me, realized they were there, kind of got distracted by them, and then I pushed myself faster without even knowing it. And I think those coaches sometimes get that sense, put that sense in you, where they're talking to you and you're listening to them, that inner voice, replacing that inner voice of you, and you don't even realize that you have pushed yourself further possibly faster than you would have done just on your own. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And I will say off the 4 mile run, I would say the last mile, almost mile and a half of that run, the coaches were not going into long, you know, several minute descriptions. They were like, hey, you've got 1,000 meters left. You know, you're doing great. Keep pushing. Remember to do this or that. You've got 500. Like it was just, they were just in there to just keep motivating you to be like, hey, you're almost there. Keep moving. You know, I'll see you at the finish line, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I will continue to probably use it. Definitely again for the speed runs, some of those longer runs, depending on how the weeks go. I will use those recoveries for me time. otherwise, yeah, I think the training plans are great. If anybody is thinking about getting into running, or really just any sort of fitness program on your own, I cannot recommend the Nike Training Club and Nike Run Club apps enough. They always get me into a better place, like physically, than I was when I started. I've done a few training programs. The running programs continue to be really helpful. So, yeah, highly recommend them.
Right on, right on.
Not a paid advertisement.
I'll give one of the long run training guided plans a shot one of these days. I mean, I've got plenty of time to check it out. The four mile,
like in 3 weeks, we'll be running like 8 miles. So.
The 4 miler that I did, I was listening to the latest episode of Critical Role trying to catch up.
That's a good idea.
So trying to catch up on the latest exploits of the gang, and you know what? Speaking of inner voices, yeah, no, it's a good distraction when they're doing stupid shit, and you're like, instead of focusing on, oh, I got to go up this long ass hill again, it's Why would you do that? Why would you roll that? that type of stuff.
Yeah, I find I don't typically like listening to podcasts or audiobooks or anything like that when I'm running. I feel like I try to get in the zone with music and things like that. But I feel like that's a good opportunity, especially, you know, and say 6 weeks from now when we've got 8 mile runs and 9.5 mile runs. That's a good time to catch up on some Critical Role, because I am way behind, and it's just like 4 hour episodes almost or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's really hard to catch up on that, carve out 4 hours every week.
What really helps is when you skip all the boring stuff.
Wait, yeah, there you go.
Because admittedly, There is some good stuff in there, the role playing, the characters developing, some combat, right? But there are things where it's the trappings of D&D in general, which is going to the store and looking at items to buy and picking out outfits and stuff like that.
In-game ecosystems and whatnot.
Or sitting in a tavern for basically 2 hours doing no like story development, and it's all character development, and skip in 30 minutes. Anything new? Nope. Skip 30 minutes.
I guess that, but see, I always get so wrapped up in, that's like how we're different with spoilers and things like that. Right. Where I'm like, oh, I want to hear every detail about, you know, what's going on and what, how the characters got to that point. Yeah. And you're like, let's move on. More plot. I'll look it up on Wikipedia. It's fine. Do you feel that your listening to Critical Role has impacted positively or negatively your approach to playing D&D or some of the ways that you try to play D&D as a group?
Yeah, well, I the Critical Role running thing was a perfect segue into talking about D&D now. As far as,
thank
like,
you for calling it out after we flawlessly transitioned from one topic to the
other. Yeah, I want to make this just in, Brandon ruined segue. it has. I think it has influenced me, because I have been listening to it a lot in the car. Usually when I'm not sleepy, that's the best time for me to listen to Critical Role. Yeah. And we've done two sessions since I've started listening a lot more. Two of our main sessions with our buddy John, my brother Brett, and my friend Brian. And the last session, not this one that we did Saturday, but the one before it, was the first time that I felt, you know what? I don't want to try to stop doing silly voices and silly character stuff. Like, I didn't want to do, I'm like, seeing how the Critical Role people do it, they're very, very into character, very into RP, and very, you know, and then they whisper into Orym. And everything is super dramatic. And I,
howdy, I'm fresh cut grass.
Fresh cut grass. FCG is the best. But I realized, you know, that's not what I want to do. I want to, let's play this game. And so, like, the last session we did, I kind of tried to stop being silly or stop trying to be a performer and just try to play the game with you guys. Yeah. And I think that I feel different about the sessions, because in that session, there was a heist situation in our college campaign where we had to go steal the trophy from this other rival college. And instead of getting into like gags and trying to joke around, I was actively saying, well, hey, let's get a plan together. And in that is different. I think something that I picked up from Critical Role is, okay, we're planning to do a quest or a job. How are we going to do it? Let's figure it out before we get there. And in the course of that, you also do a little bit of role playing on the side, just in weaving that into the building the plans and the locations you go to.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't say I've noticed a major change, but I do see you more, you know, focused on keeping the game on track, as opposed to just being like, all right, let me just throw a giant wrench into this. Your brother is a little bit more still aligned with that, where he's like, let me just be chaotic at times and let's just do something, you know, off the wall, or immediately kill somebody just because, like, why not? We're adventuring, which a lot of D&D players do. Mm-hmm. And is fine, is a way to play. But there was almost like a little bit of brotherly communication, two nights ago when we played, where it was like he offered up an idea and you're like, well, what if we just, you know, play it straight, do this thing normal. And, which we were down a party member. So, there was more room for, us to just kind of have a say in what was going on.
That's right. Well, I remember that. It was because we had the job was, our professor wanted us to go to this bathhouse and talk him up to the proprietor there, Salamandra.
Salamander,
yeah. And Brett wanted to do something that would kind of throw the wrench in the game as far as our relationship with the teacher and get in, and which logically, like, you're gonna make us fail that class. He's gonna be pissed off at it. So there was a back and forth, and Brett is a little more of a troll when it comes to that stuff. Sure. And not that I don't mind that thing, but we did start late and want to try to keep on track with making progress and make everyone feel like they got something out of the session.
Sure.
And the way the jobs were lined up, it worked out for us, because this bathhouse was a thing. Your character, Pierce Clawthorn, wanted to throw a college party, which was on Saturday.
That's right.
There was going to be
a rager. Can't wait. Next session. It's the party session.
Yeah, yeah. And on the job board, there was a job at the local church where there's an organ playing at night. And so we did this whole thing where we walked over to the church and then we talked to them and they said, it happens at midnight. Like, okay, well, we have to kill some time. So then we went to the tavern, and then at the tavern, we saw a bunch of characters that we'd already been introduced to over the last couple of sessions. We did some role playing. Salamantha's daughter, Sally Salamander, was there, who was a waitress.
Who's in our rival in school, right? From our group. So yeah, that was good stuff.
And
she was disgruntled to be working a part-time job while in community adventuring college. Yeah.
Yeah. And just there was all the talking about weaving the role playing into the actual questing of the game. That was very apparent to me this last session.
Yeah.
And then also I won a shack.
Yeah, that was really fun. And honestly, it was something that popped into my head from listening to Critical Role, where they do something called rollies, right? Which is just like an in-game game where they roll dice against each other, and it's one of the ways that they gamble, or their characters gamble against each other. And so we were genuinely trying to kill time to wait for this haunted organ to fire up. And we're in a tavern. I was like, hey, is anybody playing cards? Is anybody? And a little bit, I mean, like, I'm not trying to catch our DM off guard, but hey, I'm going to throw this out there. Is there a card game going on? Is there somebody, you know, betting something around? Can I get, as an old half orc, you know, ne'er-do-well, can I get involved in some gambling? And John was like, yeah, let's, yeah, there's cards happening. There's this, play some bets, roll some dice. And in the middle of that, you and your character, being of wealthy heritage, you're like, money is no big thing. Let me throw out 100 gold. And
I wasn't that cocky. I was
okay. Fair enough. You were not, but somebody, John decided that somebody would call your bet by putting the keys to their shack out on the table, and you won.
And
I won that bet.
And I won. And I was so, I want to ask John, I haven't asked him yet, like if it was a straight roll, if he rolled a straight D20 as well, or if like behind the scenes he had, you know, the dude rolled with advantage because it was a shack that I was going to win. But yeah, I won it. And then at first I thought, I don't want to be a dick. I should give the shack back to him. But then I thought, well, you know, I did win it. I should, what's the rent? Maybe I could charge him rent. And then did a history check to see like if I knew what the rental prices were in that area. And so now that dude owes me a gold a week starting in 2 weeks.
Yeah. You became a landlord in our last session. You're already investing in real estate as a D&D player.
I need to write to my father and tell him the good news.
That's awesome. I really like our sessions. I think we got a great group right now that we're playing with, and it's just it's a fun environment. I think for John is incredibly talented and very familiar from where we are now from where we were as D&D noobs, you know, a few years ago. He's just does a great job of, you know, developing fun and interesting premises and you know, one-off adventures and things like that. And the whole Goblindale Adventuring Academy is he just continues to build on it, and it just keeps getting better. So it's a lot of fun. And now we're leveling up to level 4.
That's right.
Getting stronger, you know, figuring out these new spells and new abilities. And yeah, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good. Today I DM'd for my wife and 10-year-old.
All right.
And so that using the Essentials kit, which is the Ice Spire with the dragon. Yeah, there you go. You got it back there. And
knock Morty off the shelf.
The kid, he rolled a turtle. I pulled his character off D&D at D&D Beyond, built him a turtle wizard, and my wife is a Kenku rogue. And it's pretty fun. it's her first experience playing D&D. He had played like the D&D kind of board game, which has D&D factors to it, but it's not pure D&D. Yeah. And they're
in a gateway game.
Gateway, exactly.
Yeah.
They're in the town, they're at the job board, they took a job, they went to tell these dwarves that there's a white dragon flying around and they need to come back. And they said, "Hey, we'll go back, but if you can help us clear out this temple, there's some monster in there." And so they went in there and they fought a yellow ochre or ochre jelly. And Chelsea almost died, but they defeated it with some, DM dice fudging.
Some fudgy rolls.
And then they left and then they fought two orcs. They kicked the orcs' butt. And that was it. And like, okay, cool. The kid loved it. He's like, that is so much more fun than that board game.
Chelsea, yeah, it is.
Chelsea is not, I don't know if she's super convinced yet. We were distracted because we're in the middle of trying to buy a house at the same time.
Oh, yeah. That can be very distracting.
but I think we're going to keep going, and I'm going to keep them going as well. So, which will come in handy, especially for the kid, when you and I co-DM for our kids collectively.
Yeah, my son has mentioned it a couple times this week. He's like, "Hey, when can we make my character? When can we do this stuff?" So my goal is to get that done this week. He was watching like a random YouTube video, and then he just turns to me. He's like, "Dad, are there like monkey characters in D&D? And I like look it up, and there's some like homebrew like ape type. And I'm like, "Yeah, you could obviously just take stat blocks and characteristics from another thing and homebrew it out. Like, yeah, you want to be a monkey dude? Yeah, we'll work it out. Like, we'll figure it out." He his first time playing, he was a dragonborn, and he just thought his guy was so cool. My oldest, she's really more focused on the minis now. I was like, "Yeah, we're gonna make a character," and she's like, "Well, once we do, can you print a mini of it?" I was like, "I probably could, and it would probably be very helpful if we were playing in person to have miniatures to move around." So that's something that we can do this week, and I don't know, get the whole family involved.
Nice, nice.
So. Yeah,
I forced John to let me into one of his other campaign one shots. So I'm making a walrus creature eventually to help out those characters. Just one shotty, just to F around. I don't have time to
Can
do
I tell
any more
you
campaigns.
That is a comfort zone I have not breached yet, and that is playing
strangers.
Games with other people other than our group. I don't know. I feel like our flavor of D&D is probably pretty standard for how most people probably play. But for some reason, I just think of it as ours and what we do, even though I literally listen to podcasts of people playing and it's not.
It's us. Very yeah.
It's essentially the same. So my thought is like, all right, I'm going to go. Like, I certainly don't have these books memorized. And I think that's apparent as we play as a group, when I'm like, what are my spells again? but so I guess there's a bit of an intimidation factor there to go to another group and have some sort of expectation to be like, no, this beast has a, DC of this and you should know that, blah, blah, or whatever. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know any of that stuff. So, but I don't know. Most people that play D&D are pretty welcoming, I think, too. So
yeah, you're right, though. The first time I played with anybody else was with Brett and his friends, and that was in person, and we had basically up until that point in time exclusively done online. And so to do it in person is just
still the only way I've played. I've never played in person, period.
Yeah. Oh, not even with your family? You didn't do
I guess I'll count that one time. Yeah. When they begrudgingly sat at the table with me on my birthday and appeased dad for a game of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. I will say like tossing the dice and stuff like that, it does it changes things up because I have to actually do math. It's weird playing with different people because it feels different. Even when we bring somebody new, and when I say we, I mean me, I bring somebody random that nobody's ever met before to play a one shot, or my brother-in-law, or whomever. I am always on the side with this kind of, I hope this turns out well. Even though I know it will, I just know it is a different team dynamic when you add somebody in, because you don't know how forceful or passive or chaotic they're going to be.
The chaotic part, I think, is always a concern for me, because I'll hear people at work talking about, oh, we had a D&D session last night and so-and-so like inverted the world, or like, oh, we collapsed a moon. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, what level are you guys? How are you doing this? And meanwhile, we're like, let's tease our classmate at the tavern. we're a little bit more, innocuous. But I think that everybody's going to have different play styles. And I think you can feel that out. And over time, the course of an hour or so, you could probably... I don't know. I'm a bit of a chameleon in terms of how my social interactions. So I kind of try to go to the same level as those around me. And so, I just feel it out. And yes. And for the rest of the time.
Yeah. And I'll say that I probably, especially after John's one shot, the first one shot he did that caused drama between us because my character was an asshole. And, that seeing what that does to the dynamics of our friendship, don't need to do that type of stuff. And so I worry that other people come in to do that as well, because it is a collaborative game, which we should all be having fun. And if somebody's screwing around and screwing with everybody else, then I'm kind of hesitant about it. So far,
I've heard a lot of stories of games that go that way, and it makes me like, I don't know if I want to be part of that.
Yeah,
but. Maybe there's the other part of me that's like, I want to play in a group of eight people. Like, I want to try that. I want to see what it's like to be in a game with like a full party and lots of, we've name dropped Critical Role enough times, but they have a lot of different people. And sometimes it's a lot because everybody's trying to get their piece in there, and sharing time with everybody can be challenging with a larger group, but it allows for some of those holes that we find ourselves in terms of, well, we don't really have a healer, or we don't really have somebody with a lot of damage dealing or things like that. Our party is doing okay for the three of us, but a couple of extra people wouldn't hurt in terms of covering our bases. So
I would say that for us, there's the Air Force Gaming League on Discord. A bunch of Air Force dudes. I've done a couple of one shots with them, and they're welcoming. They're friendly. There's a bunch of them, and everybody wants everybody else to succeed, especially because they know that they probably know somebody that they work with.
That's fair. What's the thing called that's like the official D&D, like, is it like Adventuring League or something like that?
Adventuring League,
That's where you like Adventures you actually League. Like have you have to like track your character and all the games you play in and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You progressively, but you can like take that character around to like different parties and different games, so long as you manage it correctly.
Yeah.
Then you can that's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. That I feel like is would be a big step out of my comfort zone. But I think that'd be interesting to play with that dynamic and understand leveling a character past level 5, which I feel like I've never really done. I think we started at like 5 once or something. But
Early on when we started playing, that was kind of one of the things that was interesting to me and that I had hoped that we would be able to do. Is even if we had like a series of one shots, which essentially a campaign is a series of one shots, if we really stop and think about it. But the idea was if we had a character, a consistent character that we can, you know, move over here, pull them into different worlds, essentially all the things that you, I, me, John, have done, it's all connected in weird ways. And so like my first character, Healy Dan, then Lou Gossett Sr., you know, the adopted
turned out to be his father. Yeah.
I know Kevin, who played with us, and he's in the middle of jobs right now. He had one of his characters he had in two different one shots that he was using. I like the idea of being able to use those characters and they, you know, over and over again. I think
when we go ahead.
Go ahead.
Let's just keep doing this for the next 30 minutes.
When we
played the initial starter set, I would say that really was, while it may have felt like a series of one shots, it really was a campaign in the sense of there was an overarching story where each of the one shots, maybe it was go to this dungeon, rescue a person, but that person had information about another place, or they were trying to go find this, you know, temple, this dungeon for a specific relic, things like that. And so as you guys moved through all these different encounters and places like that, it was all building towards that big bad, that story that, you know, somebody else was affecting everything else. To me, I like that idea. I think I would love to get into a situation where we played characters for a long period of time that worked through campaigns like that. And maybe, I mean, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but let's say we get through Goblindale and we all graduate. Do these characters then go off as a band of adventurers to other places to, you know, for, you know, various reasons? Do we just shake hands at graduation, at each other on Facebook, and then never talk again? Like, what, you know, what happens? So
do they get a teaching gig over at a different college and they find Montana James teaching there?
Yeah, you know? That's right. I forgot about old Monty James.
Oh, Monty. Yeah. You know, that's the cool thing about D&D and listening to Critical Role. They have callbacks to all of their previous campaigns, all their one shots, all these different things that we're in season three and they refer to a lot of stuff. It goes past my head. But then John was like, oh, did you listen to this last episode? And I said, yeah. He's like, well, this gnome character, that's a reference to a Christmas one shot they had a couple years back. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. But there's fun stuff, dude, that is just little breadcrumbs. Well, and
we did that within our games too, where we would, you know, talk about mushrooms, talk about you know, bad cooks and, you know, all sorts of things. So real quick, I know I asked about Vox Machina before and you like abruptly said no. Still anti the animated Critical Role series on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I'm not interested in it enough. Although I will say they're all talented voice actors. I think that with an actual written script and them doing those characters, probably more tolerable than the idea of listening to them for 4 hours at a time and not make it past their bedroom window.
All right, fair enough. I am curious a little bit about, I want to watch like an episode or two. Is it just them playing D&D and then they animated over it, or did they take the events of a D&D campaign and then sort of script that out and replay it? Like, basically, if we were to take what is it essentially improv D&D and then boil that down to a condensed storyline, pull all the thinking and deliberation and dice rolling probably out of it, and then make an animated series out of that. Is that what it is? Or is it like, is it actual? Just, I don't know. It's, that to me is interesting.
I have to look it up. I'm trying to look at a website to talk about it here. I imagine that it has to be if not scripted, it has to be at least edited a fair amount, because in order to have a visual medium, you have to have some kind of story beat, beginning, middle, end, and it can't last for 4 hours. It has to be shortened. So even if it's not scripted, at the very least, it is edited to be coherent and succinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. I've seen weird clips on social media where it shows like them at the Critical Role table, like saying a line and then showing the animated character like saying the same line. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I'm like, oh, that's okay. That's interesting. I'm going to watch one this week, and then we'll come back in, you know, a week or two, and I'll update you on what I find out. So
it might be like Reno 911, where they took all of the audio, all the video, and then some poor bastard editor was behind the scenes
having to put it all together.
Yeah. Just crying, going through his third divorce because you've just been stuck in the editor's room the entire time.
Yeah. Could be.
It could be.
Right. I mean, we have other topics that we could have potentially discussed, but wouldn't you know it, we're coming in on close to an hour here, Brandon. So any final thoughts or quick topics you want to touch on before we get out of here?
Final thoughts? I would say the last episode of Rounding the Bases is going to release here on Wednesday or so. Old Robbie, old Matt, they are heading to greener pastures, which I don't know what those pastures look like. Matt has is a newscaster, as you know, and he works for television. And so doing a podcast on the side probably isn't the most beneficial for that, or acceptable practice. Sure. And so, he needs to support his family, so he's going to run off and do that. And Robbie is going to continue thinking about his creative avenues further. And who knows if I'm busy later on down the road, good handful of months, perhaps a year, maybe help him out and get him started on something else. But beautiful. No promises, well, Robbie.
No promises.
Piece of shit.
I will say congrats to those guys on a great run. I mean, they had a good following there for a period of time, and I appreciate them coming and being part of this show before they hit those greener pastures. And best of luck to both of them.
Best of luck. And as always, to everyone listening, everybody who stopped in briefly on Twitch to listen to us, thank you so much for being a part of this. Even if it's for a second, the support is felt and appreciated. So thank you. And now I'm going to go eat some macaroni and cheese.
Ooh, delicious macaroni. Stouffer's. Oh, all baked up. You got breadcrumbs on that stuff?
Ooh, I don't, but I might go get some bread crumbies.
I had some sweet ramen today. It wasn't sweet, it was spicy. It was shun? No. What is it? Comes in that red package.
Yeah, it's
shum. The shushu.
It starts with an SH. But it's good.
It's delicious. It was delicious. So cool. And I put some like strips of steak in it. Anyway,
God.
Anyway, guys, that's our show. thanks so much for listening. We love you. Come back next time. Don't forget, every Monday night, we tend to be recording these at about, I don't know, 6 p.m. Pacific time. That'd be 9 o'clock on the East Coast. Join us. Go over to that twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm and be part of the show. We'd love to have you.
Oh, I have one last plug, Travis, and that's this Saturday, which is the 26th of February. It's the rematch we've all been waiting for. It's the Intergalactic Uno Cup. That's right. Dr. Strike, my alter ego, is playing Uno against Dean, Matt. It's going to be a blast. Another 3 hours of Uno. I lost last time. Dean just came back and just destroyed. It's bullshit.
This is your chance. This is your chance to to put it all on the line and come back in a blaze of glory.
All on the line. So head over to my Twitter at Barnyard Cruise, where you can see me tweet the link out for this Saturday. There'll be clips out there on Twitch. We'll put those out on YouTube as well. But I want to throw that out there. And I think that's it.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you here next time. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.